Oh, sometimes the train goes by and splits a man in half. Butterflied. Oh, man.
That's so dark.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
And I'm Evan Davis.
And we are coming to you from different cities this time. I'm in San Francisco. Another sort of barn burner NWSL weekend where I feel like things that we have thought might be true, some of them became a little more true, like the fact that Kansas City just keeps rolling along. You were at that game on Friday.
Well, I'll say that we're the official women's soccer content partner of American Soccer Analysis. Obviously, we love everything that they do over there statistically, but early in the season, XG models can vary between each other, sometimes to a slightly egregious amount. Eventually, they all more or less kind of follow the same band. So I was just curious and decided to average a bunch of models together, whether it's ASA or FBref or Wyscout and StatsBomb, just to kind of get a picture if any of those models were pulling a team up or down the leaderboard. And Kansas City is first. No surprise there. 2.1 non-penalty XG per game they're averaging. This is the hilarious part. They are conceding on average about 1.5 non-penalty XG per game. That's the Kansas City current experience as presently constituted. And on Friday, they were not great for a lot of the game. Becky Tweed rolled out a back three, which was really a back five, keeping the wingbacks very, very deep. And not giving Chiwenga room to move. I mean, Sarah Gordon and Jasmine Spencer just stuck to her. They just were everywhere that she went, they went. But you can only do that for so long until you start to wear out, not only physically, but also mentally. And then whether Spencer was ready to come off because she had no gas in the tank, or if Tweed was looking for a different kind of a spark in the closing stages of the game, on came Giselle Thompson at right back. And at one point, I looked at Thompson. She'd been on the field for maybe 2 minutes, and she was standing on the right side of the box, just outside of the box. And I could see her looking behind her and seeing Temwa Chiwenga completely alone in an oceans of space. And then I saw her turn and look in front of her and saw Dabinia in the final third in oceans of space. And you could see this 18-year-old who had just gotten off of a long injury layoff think to herself, what am I supposed to do here? And lo and behold, the collapse did come down that flank. And eventually, KC, I think, racked up half of their XG in that game in the final 10 minutes, just all in stoppage time. It was that kind of a contest.
Yeah, this was another weekend with a lot of late goals. This game decidedly so. Yeah, Gotham and Louisville decided we weren't going to score any goals until past the 90th minute. Mm-hmm. And then both of them popped one in. I believe you found that game especially chaotic.
It was a very annoying game, frankly.
Yeah. Soph Smith heard our offline chatter, I guess, about maybe not winning the Golden Boot. And she put a boot to Chicago. And frankly, it could have been worse. She could have had a third if they had not ruled it for unintentional handball off Janine Becky's shot.
Right.
On the Nairmare, as one has it.
What's funny is Nair like came up with some good saves in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she also did that.
Yeah, exactly. She had a wobble.
And I think all that needs to be said about Utah playing Houston was, well, two things can be said. One, my partner and our number one super fan, Jill James, said to me as Utah and Houston was about to kick off, I can't believe that one of these teams is going to earn points from this game, which is so real. And then ASA posted the game flow this morning saying, we can't wait for Utah to get back into the NWSL.
Oh, my God.
Just savage.
Oh, my God.
And of course, it was a 0-0 draw.
And a 0-0 draw where both teams failed to generate an entire XG.
Nope. Actually, didn't even really come close.
Yeah. You know, we can put a pin in Seattle and North Carolina because the Seattle Reign are off to a pretty shocking start at this point as far as their record is concerned.
Yeah. And it's not just their record. I mean, they're, what, 12th in XG per game?
That's bad.
They're supposed to be a defensive machine, and they're like just okay, which is not balancing out the fact that they cannot seem to create anything of quality in and around the box. It's brutal. It's really brutal to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that we, You know, not that we care so much about a lot. A big ASA joke is finishing isn't real, but it has been especially not real for Seattle this year in terms of outcomes.
You can balance out finishing luck if you are just generating a high volume of good chances, and they are absolutely not doing that.
They seem like they need to do something in the summer transfer window if they want to recover this season.
I'd say it's desperately needed.
Yeah, the Laura Harvey era. And then San Diego squeaked one out against Bay in what was a pretty even game.
Yeah, Bay midfield is just a nightmare. It just continues to be a nightmare.
Nice that Oshawala got back on the board, first goal since opening day.
And survived a potential injury scare. She went down looking rather grimaced, but she seems to be all right. Using Tess Bode in a double pivot was interesting, but that also just drove a lot of their possession deeper into the field, which is not what you want. They just looked a little stymied. You know, I don't know how you fix it. I mean, the system that Alberti Montoya wants to play, if Dana Castellanos continues to play poorly and without Alex Loera to play make from deeper on the pitch, how do you expect to do it? You know, especially when you just have these two blue chip strikers who all they want to do is run in behind and drive at center backs and make goalkeepers look foolish. Maybe you just need to let them do what they do.
I was about to make some jab about the fact that Bay can redeem themselves midweek, but they play Portland.
It's a bonne chance.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never going to let me down, except in the early part of this season, Bay. Let's go to our game of the week, which I thought was kind of a banger all around. Orlando, who might be really good, and Washington.
Orlando squeaking by 3-2.
Orlando squeaky bum timed one. Or did they? Or were they better than that?
I mean, when you score your only two good chances of the game and you draw a penalty that you slot home, I think we can maybe chalk this up to a little bit of luck. However, right now, Orlando's got the best non-penalty XG differential in the league. Full stop. Mm-hmm. And that is not a sentence I thought I was going to be uttering in week six, or maybe ever. I think we've mentioned it before. Since mid-April of 2023, they've arguably been the best team in the league. They're kind of just doing everything pretty well. Seb Hiens has kind of built a defensive machine, and though they got out XG'd by Washington, it's not like the Spirit had that many quality looks. I mean, Sars chip, which gets scored.
Oof, what a beaut.
Hatch off the bar at the death at the end of stoppage time, which is a little bit pell-mell and game steady because Washington's pressing for a result. But other than that, they were pretty well contained, it must be said. Adrian Gonzalez is maybe finally giving up the ghost on Ashley Hatch being a starter if he does not want to play her as a center forward, which is hilarious because when she was brought on as a center forward in the second half, she scores and created an incredible chance right at the end of stoppage time. So it makes you think, maybe that would be a useful weapon to have more regularly.
I mean, we'll get to the Ashley Hatch goal, but, you know, like saying she scores is like saying she got a gift from heaven on that one.
Yeah, that's a Morehouse mare for sure.
That's more mare.
That's a more mare.
It's a more mare. Let's break this down.
I think they read Gonzalez's tactical wrinkles and kind of gave it to the Spirit. I mean, Paige Mataier got brought in to play as basically a right winger or a right midfielder. Mataier is a 6'8". She's a central mid. And that seemed solely to try and contain whatever flank threat that Angelina or Barbara Banda, if Banda was drifting wide, could offer. But that also meant that their attack was completely left side focused with the triangle between Casey Kruger, Trinity Robin, and Croy Bethune. Hiens could task Emily Sams and Haley McCutcheon and even Julie Doyle, who was dropping fairly deep at times, to just contain them, not even necessarily beat them, but just don't give them a lot of great looks. And it was pretty effective. I mean, he is very comfortable not having the ball. They kind of built this sort of, how would you say, almost like a lopsided diamond midfield.
That's exactly how I'd describe it, yes.
Yeah, with just Abello trying to be the offensive outlet on the left and keeping Doyle and Brianna Martinez fairly deep to soak up pressure. It's also a team that feels like it's a little bit of a work in progress because this is the first time that Barbara Banda has started a game. Boy, oh boy, she's going to be good.
Yeah, it's sort of like first time she started a game, substantial impact. Taking a team that already kind of has their shit together and making it a little bit more together. What I had noticed sort of from the jump was Orlando had a committed, organized press that Washington almost seemed a little annoyed by in those first 15 minutes and then would drop back pretty quickly if the press didn't render something.
I think StatsBomb sort of gave credit to Sean Dyche's Burnley for that kind of pressing strategy.
Yeah.
Like the moment your first line is broken, you just drop back into a block and stay organized in the defensive half. And if you have players with the stamina and the ability to kind of track back and get organized quickly, that's a very effective tool when you know the opposition has better players on the ball and you're probably not going to have a lot of the ball. It worked. It absolutely worked. And now, with being able to start Banda and hopefully get Adriana back sooner rather than later, you have players both with speed and with off-ball intelligence to get into good pockets and release themselves quickly that... once you do win possession back deeper in your own half, those players all of a sudden can remain threats. And I mean, again, Banda's goal, it's a corner header. It doesn't feel like it should be anything special. But the way that she is able to latch onto that deflection to score is the product of someone who just is in command of their instrument.
Frankly, for me, it's the Angelina opening goal. That's even more impressive from
Banda. Well, because, I mean, that it's not just that run, but the ability to also, like, put the cutback on a dime when you are basically desperately trying to also keep the ball in play. Extraordinary shit.
Yeah, for me, the Barbara Banda experience is that opening goal, which is to say, afterburners to get to the ball with little time to spare, but the poise and understanding of not only what one needs to do and the amount of pressure they need to apply to this cross, but where their runners are. And it's a dime. It's a beaut.
All three of Orlando's goals reflect the many facets of why Barbara Banda seems to be as special a player as her reputation indicated. Because first, it's being able to break the Washington back line. And then, as you say, not only have the poise and the technical nous, but also the vision to know that Angelina is going to run and be in the exact space where she needs to be to hit the ball on the volley. Then to have the same sort of like instinct and power to whip a deflection on a corner kick with that level of precision, classic big man forward stuff. And then to be able to draw the penalty at the top of the box, which allows for Summer Yates to score what will be the winning goal. What else can you ask of a forward, of a true number nine? It's incredible.
It was a dazzling performance in my mind. And there are so many games where this results in no assists and no goals, where Angelina whiffs on what is a really hard finish.
Yeah, half a step off, sky's the bar, or doesn't even, or yeah. Just whiffs it.
I think that that's an instance where, like, the XG on that chance is high and sort of understates the difficulty of that chance, because that ball is sort of comes in a sort of awkward skipped bounce, which Angelina handles beautifully, but I think most people would have fired into Rosie, and that header often doesn't appear, or Banda hits that right into the keeper.
Or the deflection is a centimeter off, and that creates a completely different vector for her.
Totally. And the third, it really was an idiotic penalty to concede. It's as dumb a foul as you will see this season. When you concede a penalty, and instead of protesting, you stand up disgusted with oneself.
You know.
Like, you done fucked up. I think there was just total and utter disgust on her part with what she had just done. But I also think that, like, that's a byproduct of Banda being such a tormentor throughout the game.
Battelle was the one that Banda smoked for the assist on Angelina's goal, too.
Yeah, regardless of the outcomes here, Barbara Banda, in this game, everything came off, but it was just like, especially when you don't have a lot of possession, it means those attacking opportunities you have, you need to be really on for. And Banda just, as a better player, maximized each of these opportunities and was the catalyst for what ended up being a very impressive road result.
Yeah, I would normally say, like, if you get out XG'd and you only had two good chances and you only had about 41% of the ball, normally you say that's probably a byproduct of luck that you won the game. But dig around a little bit more, and even though they only had 41% of the ball and only took seven shots, they had one more touch in the box than Washington did throughout the game. which tells you that a in-behind weapon like Banda can generate potential chances in ways that other players might not be able to under those circumstances. And the two chances are absolutely legitimately good chances. There's really no ifs, ands, or buts about them.
And the third is a stonewall penalty. I think that the thing, I agree with you. I typically would look at the non-penalty XG in a game like this and say, Washington should be pretty upset that they didn't get a result here. And Orlando rode their luck. But I think that case-by-case basis, this is a game where, like, Orlando has just a tremendously talented weapon in Barbara Banda, a player that could end up being the catalyst that takes them into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and think about all the ways in which Orlando was playing with one hand tied behind their back last night. I mean, Adriana's hurt, didn't even make the bench. Marta was nursing a knock. Raffaele just got back onto the field after her foot injury before the Gold Cup and needed to build herself up and get into the swing of things. Heck, I mean, the red card against Brianna Martinez in the 90th minute could have cost them and almost did based on, you know, Hatch rattling the bar and then that sort of goal mouth scramble involving Trinity Rodman's header right at the death. On another day, those two shots go in and Washington's walking away winning 4-3. So the ability to play well and activate a weapon who is not even fully online yet, so to say, is a harbinger of things to come. They've banked a lot of points. They have banked a lot of XG. There is a bank of performances that indicate that when they are at full strength, this is going to be a very, very tough team to break down and beat for the rest of the season. And I just think it's incredibly refreshing. I mean, this is a season, only six games in, where Louisville's playing quite well. Kansas City is obviously Kansas City. Orlando, teams that weren't necessarily on our preseason prediction playoff spots, but also hopefully means that they can spread the wealth around the league. And clearly it's working. I mean, all of those teams are building their live attendances week by week. So if they can remain good and remain exciting, then that's only to the league's benefit.
I think one of the things, as I've been reflecting on what we thought about Orlando, a lot of teams in the league preseason, this is where a late transfer of a Barbara Banda type or not having data collected in other leagues that allow us to like get a whole sense of the player. This is where those scouting departments and where internal data that we don't have informs decisions that improve teams. And what would have been questioned, I think we both would have had like a Temwa Chiwenga question mark before the season started. No such question mark exists in my mind anymore. All right, let's flip the script and talk Washington. A team that I think we both picked them to finish fifth, and I think we're pretty high on, but they've sort of come about it in a way, and we've talked about them earlier. They've arrived at who they are currently with personnel decisions that I think continue to sort of feel like head scratchers or personnel decisions that are proving to be pretty great choices. Where do you want to begin with Washington?
I think maybe we should talk about how this version of the team is supposed to represent them in the long term. I think that's still the thing that we're kind of having to suss out because Lacy Santos is coming in the summer. Jonathan Giraldez is obviously coming in the summer as well. Maybe other players will be coming in the summer after the Olympics, TBD. We knew going in that this was Adrian Gonzalez and the players he had available to him was a real, like, hold down the fort until the cavalry arrives scenario. They scored a home run by drafting Croy Bethune and Bethune turning into the player that she has turned into. But there have been all of these weird parts that are sort of moving around and not fitting quite properly together. Uli Matasar, I think we mentioned it when we went in depth on Washington earlier in the year, seems to be the number nine now. And I think there's a lot of justifiable reasons for that in the context of how Giraldez is going to want the team to play. She's mobile. She is good with the ball at her feet. She's not a strictly back-to-goal, hold-up kind of player in the way that Hatch is. Giraldez is probably not going to want to play with a target player like that. But what do you do with Hatch? She has this big extension that she just signed. She's in her prime. She's still very good at what she does, but she only kind of does one thing. If you don't want to play with two strikers, what do you do with her? Playing her as this deep sitting winger slash central midfielder for the first few games of the year was a failure. She wasn't adding anything offensively or defensively. Bringing Paige Mataire in to replace her is interesting because, again, Mataire has defensive instincts, so why are you pushing her high up the field playing in front of Andy Sullivan and Gabby Carl What does that get you? Was that just a one-off that Gonzalez was doing to try and contain Orlando's left side? I suppose it's possible. But there is this just sort of weird, dysfunction is too strong a word, but there just seems to be this like tactical imbalance going on where they feel maybe too much like 2023 Washington than they should. And it's only through the grace of Rodman, Kruger, and Bethune's individual and collective brilliance that I think is sort of keeping them going, at least offensively. And Sarr, I've got to throw Sarr in there too. Sarr's been excellent, but it's those four.
Uli Matasar, so far in 420 minutes, and again, it's very early, is at a 0.93 non-penalty XG plus XAG per 90. Like, that's...
No, she's great. She's been great.
She's on fire. Trinity Rodman is at 1.12 non-penalty XG plus XA. Croy Bethune is at 0.71. This is already a very effective attack out of the gates, and one that Ashley Hatch, who was so dominant last year and who recorded 0.58 non-penalty XGXA, XAG per 90, got so many letters in that. I don't think it's sustainable for any of Rodman, Sarr, Bethune. I would be surprised if all of them are roughly at this productivity per 90 at the end of the season. But so far in this small sample set, I think there is some justification to what has happened with Ashley Hatch. Just because this is working, they're rolling, they should have even expected to beat this Orlando team and made some poor decisions, defended incidentally at bad, like in not particularly productive ways. But I certainly don't think I look at this result and see any long-term concerns for the Spirit as a team. For Ashley Hatch as a member of this team, I continue to be concerned.
Yeah, I think maybe the thing that I'm homing in on is just like, what was the long-term strategy that Mark Krikorian and Michelle Kong were trying to put in place here? When you know what pieces are coming in, what do you do with this other really, really excellent piece that just doesn't seem to have a place to play anymore? And also, just thinking long-term, it's working these first six games. There's no question about that. And for whatever I wanted to say about the left side of their attack being emphasized by Orlando's defense, or attention was drawn to it, Rodman and Bethune and Sarr all had very good games against Orlando. But how do all of these pieces fit together in the vision that Giraldez is going to implement? Because Hal Hirschfeld and Andy Sullivan have not been a particularly incisive playmaking pair from deep. You are ceding a lot of central territory in possession that Giraldez is probably going to want to build through. Now, Lacy Santos changes that conversation. I do not deny it. This is what we've been saying for months. Just like we got to hold Washington at abeyance for so many reasons. Giraldez and Santos won't join the team until the middle of June. After that, yeah, you got to get them up to speed quickly. You got to make sure that enough points are banked. And they're on their way to doing that. But I don't know, man. How do you build that fluidity? The best team in the world, which Giraldez is currently managing, plays that way. Maybe the thing is that Giraldez is going to throw a curveball at us and be like, yeah, I'm done with press and possess. All I want to do is play 4-4-2 in a mid-block and just launch the ball over the top. Crazier things have happened, but I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath about it. So Gonzalez's job was to get these players in a position where the machine was more or less running smoothly, and he's getting his three primary attackers. They're flying, but it's through a lot of individual brilliance, through a lot of dribbling and pushing center backs back and trying to drive end line. There isn't necessarily a lot of combination relationship passing wise, aside from what Bethune is doing, that's shaping up. So how do you get Santos worked into that easily? There's really nothing to complain about. And yet it's a team that is getting good results and generating good performances and still just kind of looking weird, if that makes any sense.
You know, it's so funny because I think often we find ourselves in agreement about the game that we are watching and see alignment here. I think that Washington, both with what they attempt with individual dribbling and also sort of the aggressiveness with which they attempt to pass the ball into the final third, they just are like happy to take chances, lose possession. And even then, they're still a pretty strong passing team. They were 79% completion on Friday to Orlando's 67% completed passes. They were sort of good at this messy transition game and these moments of like individual brilliance and this sort of quick interlocking, interplaying runs that create gaps and spaces, and put together a pretty freaking strong performance against a team that has established that they are solid defensively. For all of the fortune that the Ashley Hatch chance represents, two goals would not have been an unfair reflection on what Washington created over the course of that game.
Sure.
Other than that opening week in Seattle, which I think you can just give a mulligan to.
Without question.
I feel like I watch a Washington team that doesn't play a style that I associate with Giraldez. And so I do have a question mark there, but is playing a style that is allowing them to create good chances, put points on the board, and really get the best out of all of their attackers, bar Ashley Hatch, and maybe at the cost of Ashley Hatch. Do I have problems with their midfield? Absolutely. In some ways, I kind of feel like what Washington is doing is what we thought Bay might end up looking like.
Mm.
It's just this explosive talent, and all you need is your midfield to be functional. I think we can debate, and we will put a pin in and watch how Hirschfeld and Sullivan perform over the rest of the season. But I think right now you can say this team has a functional-ish midfield. They're not giving you a lot in terms of creation. Outstanding weapons up front, and are really benefiting from deep passing from center backs. And the presence of Casey Krueger, who looks like, in my mind, one of the better low-key signings of the winter.
Yeah, not even that low-key, honestly, but yeah.
Yeah, not even that low-key. A big signing. I look at this team, and you see elements of sort of who they were last year. And I don't disagree with you. I just think who they were last year was actually, like, pretty good. Is it that next level? You know, we'll see. But I guess I just don't find myself as concerned about Washington. Their banking points, they lost sort of a freak result last night. They lost a very strange game in Seattle. And otherwise, I think have been solid to good always coming out. And like player by player, they just have so much talent, even if they're not choosing to use all of that talent.
Listen, I can't really argue with any of that.
But I love that this team, like you watch this team and you are like, I don't know, man. And I watch this team and I go, I don't know, man. They're pretty good. You know, like, like these are, I think that's what it is. Those are both totally reasonable takes. And the Giraldez question, it's a good question to have Jonathan Giraldez coming over. We've talked about it. But I see a Washington team that is getting results, or at least putting themselves in position to get results. Maybe not doing it with this sort of like great philosophical style, but with some pretty nice interplay, pretty nice risk-oriented interplay with their attack. America, a place of rebirth and reimagination.
You know what else is a place of rebirth and imagination? Rebirth and,
I was trying to set you up this time. I thought you'd take that bait.
Expected own goals. You know, Leopard can't change its spots. Please rate us, please review us, please follow us. Rate us 5 stars if you're going to rate us at all. Follow us on social media channels at X Own Goals. That's the letter X Own Goals, including Blue Sky. If you think we've made an own goal, please email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com.
Yeah. Is this real life? Is this just fantasy? Open your eyes.